We are in the book of Genesis in chapter 24. We started at the beginning of the year. We've been tracking God's story of redemption through the book of Genesis. And today's story is all about details. How many of you would say that you are detail people? Like, if you're going on a trip, you're going to have a list of what you're going to pack, where you're going to go, what you're going to eat, where you're going to stop, all those things. How many detail people are there in the room? Okay. And now, how many of you are not detailed people? I'm assuming it's the spouse of the detailed people. How many of you are not detailed people? You just kind of go with the flow. You've never made a list and checked it off in your life. You just assume it's all going to work out. I don't understand you. Today's story is about details, and it's about how God is in the details of the story. We're going to look at the story of Isaac and Rebecca. And so since we left off last week, and we skipped chapter 23, you can go read it this week. But since we've left off, Sarah has died. Abraham and Sarah have had Isaac, but Sarah has died, and she has been buried in the land of Canaan. And Abraham was old last week. He's even older this week, and he is seeking a wife for his son Isaac. The only thing is he knows he cannot find one around you. Anybody ever been in that situation? You look around you, and you're like, I can't find a spouse. Yeah. Abraham is in that situation in the land of Canaan, not because there's not pretty women around, but because there's not any godly women around, right? And so the only way for God to fulfill his promise to Abraham is if Isaac gets married and has kids, and so that he multiplies, and so that he takes the land of Canaan. Now, Genesis 24 is a love story. It's not just a love story. It's a story about faith. It's a story about obedience. It's a story about God's divine guidance and provision for Abraham, for Isaac. And Abraham is going to trust God today. The servant is going to seek God's direction. Rebecca is going to show godly character. And Isaac is going to receive God's provision in his life. And so today is all about the details. This story is the longest one single narrative in all of the book of Genesis, right at the center. It's got a lot of detail. We're not going to be able to talk about all those details. But the question is today, is God in the details? Is he in the details of our lives? Is he in the circumstances that we go through? Or is it just random chance? Is it just circumstance? Or is God really in the story? And the point of today is God is in the details. Okay, so let's look at it. Starting in verse 20, chapter 24, verse 1 through 9. And it says, now Abraham was old, well advanced in years, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. And Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who had charge of all that he had, put your hand under my thigh, that I may make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell, but that you will go to my country and to my kindred and take a wife for my son Isaac. And the servant said to him, perhaps the woman may not be willing to follow me to this land. Must I then take your son back to the land from which you came? And Abraham said to him, see to it that you do not take my son back there. The Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, and who spoke to me and swore to me, to your offspring I will give this land. He will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there. And if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you will be free from this oath of mine. Only you must not take my son back there. And so the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham, his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. So Abraham is looking for a wife for Isaac. Now, I don't know about you. How many of you fathers had somebody put their hand under your thigh and swear to you that they would go find a wife? But that's not how marriage works in our day. And if it does, I want to hear your story after. Marriage doesn't work like this today. The end result is the same. A man and a woman married together, united in covenant forever. But in their day, their process was much different than our process of dating apps and dating and courting and all the things that we go about to get to the point of marriage. In fact, for the book, for thousands of years, it's only really the last little bit of history in Western society have we married in a different way than arranged marriage. I get it. It feels a little weird for us. I see middle school boys shaking their head thinking, there's no way I want my mom picking my spouse, right? But this is how it worked. It doesn't sound romantic to us, but this is how they did it. And so Abraham is getting older. Isaac's getting to marrying age, and Abraham feels this need. I need to take care of this for my son. If Isaac's going to have offspring, if he's going to raise them under this covenant promise of God, then I need to find him a godly wife. And so he enlists his head servant, this man that he thought, probably Eleazar, who he thought would be his heir. And he gives him this mission. He makes him swear by the most serious of oaths that he will do what Abraham asked him to do, to find a godly wife. She can't be from the land of Canaan where they are, because she will not be a fear of Yahweh, the Lord. He has to go back to Haran. He has to go back to Ur, the Chaldeans, Mesopotamia, where Abram is from, to find a wife. This is a 500 plus mile journey. This is weeks, if not months, if not years, for this journey to take place. Now, the servant has a question to Abram, right? Probably a question you should ask if I'm going to go that far. Hey, what if by chance this lady doesn't want to come back here? Kind of a normal question, right? Right? If you show up randomly and just invite a lady to come back 500 miles today, I don't know. I'm just thinking, she may not be willing to come back. And so he wonders, is she going to be the kind of person that has faith? Is she going to be the kind of person that's okay with an unknown future, an unknown place, an unknown people? If she's not, what do I do? Do I bring Isaac here? Maybe that would fix it. And what does Abram say? He says, I have no interest in that. My son Isaac shall not go back there. Why? Because God has promised us this. Abraham is living in faith. He is believing that this is what God has given him. He's seen God fulfill his promises, and he knows God's plan for our family is to be here. God's plan for Isaac is to marry a godly wife and to be here, right? And so the servant swears. He puts his hand under his thigh. We can talk about that later. And he promises, I will do what I said I will do. Look at verse 10. It says, then the servant took 10 of his master's camels and departed. 10 camels. That's a lot of camels. Taking all sorts of choice gifts from his master. And he arose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. And he made the camels kneel down outside the city by the well of water at the time of evening, the time when women go out to draw water. And he said, O Lord, God of my master Abraham, please grant me success today and show steadfast love to my master Abraham. Behold, I'm standing by the spring of water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Let the young woman to whom I shall say, please let down your jar that I may drink, and who shall say, drink, and I will water your camels. Let her be the one whom you have appointed for your servant Isaac. By this I shall know that you have shown steadfast love to my master. And so the servant sets out on this mission with this entourage, right? It is 10 camels. He probably didn't bring 10 people, but he's probably got some other people with him. And he takes all kinds of gifts, gold, and we're going to find out jewelry and all sorts of things. Why? Well, he's going to have to give some of that to the father of this girl, but also he is showing by bringing 10 camels. I mean, this is a statement. This is like driving to prom in a limo kind of statement. You know what I mean? Right? This is showing up somewhere in a nice vehicle statement. And Abraham, or this servant, shows up and takes all of this stuff. It's also a sign to this future spouse of God's blessing on their life, that they have received wealth not because of what they have done, but because of what God has blessed them with. And so he gets there. And what does he do? Just like all of us did when we were 18 and 19 and 20 and we were looking for a girl. You got to be around the girls if you're going to find a girl, okay? And so this servant positions himself in a place where he knows I will be able to watch and witness the women of this city. He goes to the well. And he knows that if I'm there at the right time of day, all these women will come. Now, he's not just there in a beauty contest, right? We find that out pretty quickly, right? That's part of the equation here. It's not bad, right? But he creates this scenario. He's looking for the right woman. He's looking for a godly woman. He's looking for a specific kind of woman. And so he turns to God in prayer. And this is the first time in Scripture that humanity seeks God's direction, that humanity directly speaks to God and asks God, show me what to do. Show me success. Show me the way. This is the first time. And at this point, the Spirit does not indwell humanity. God's Spirit is not in this servant like he is in each one of you who believe in Jesus, right? We have the Spirit to guide us, to lead us, to direct us, to convict us, all sorts of things. This man doesn't. And so what does he have to do? He has to look at circumstance. He has to try to see God's hand at work in the details to understand, is God really sovereign over this? Is God really in control? And so what does he do? He believes that God will work, right, first. And so he sets up this situation in his head. And he says, I'm going to look for a woman. And when I ask her to give me water, she's not only going to offer me water, she's going to offer to water the camel. So what is he looking for? He's looking for someone who is hospitable. Not only that, but he's looking for someone who is hardworking. This is 10 camels. My kids scanned a little QR code in their Bible that they have, and it shows different videos. And they scanned this story like a week ago or something. And the man explained he was on a camel farm, and he was like, camels, you know, cool kid's voice and all that, but a camel can drink 25 gallons of water if it's fully thirsty, right? And probably at the end of a long journey it was. He's got 10 camels, that's 250 gallons of water, about 2,000 pounds of water, right? So he's not just saying, God, would you just kind of open the door and I'll go through it. He's setting the bar high. He's saying, my Master Isaac needs not just a godly woman, he needs a hospitable woman who will go above and beyond. He needs a hardworking woman who will go above and beyond. Because not anybody's going to do that. That's not something you offer to do casually, unless you really are that way. Look at verse 15. Let's see what happens. Is God really in the details? It says, before he had finished speaking, behold, Rebekah, who was born to Bethuel, the son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother. So this is Abraham's family. She came out with her water jar on her shoulder. And the young woman was very attractive in appearance, a maiden whom no man had known. And she went down to the spring and filled her jar and came up. And then the servant ran to meet her and said, please give me a little water to drink from your jar. He just asked for a little bit. And she said, drink, my lord. And she quickly let down her jar upon her hand and gave him a drink. And when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, I will draw water for your camels also until they have finished drinking. And so she quickly emptied her jar into the trough and ran again to the well to draw water. And she drew for all his camels. The man gazed at her in silence to learn whether the Lord had prospered his journey or not. And when the camels had finished drinking, the man took a gold ring weighing a half shekel and two bracelets for her arms weighing 10 gold shekels and said, please tell me whose daughter you are. Is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night? And she said to him, I'm the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, whom she bore to Nahor. She added, we have plenty of both straw and fodder and room to spend the night. And the man bowed his head and worshipped the Lord, and said, blessed be the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who has not forsaken his steadfast love and his faithfulness toward my master. As for me, the Lord has led me in the way to the house of my master's kinsman. Then the young woman ran and told her mother's household about these things. See, the question is God going to move? He shows up, he gets to the right place, he's got the right stuff, and he's going to make a request, and he's putting it all on the line, right? I don't know if you remember the first time you asked a girl to a date or to marry you or whatever. You're putting it all on the line. You're laying it out there ready to be rejected or to be accepted, right? And this servant is putting it all on the line, saying, God, you're going to have to move. You're going to have to give success in this situation. And what do we see? God is in this. Just as the servant had said, had asked for God to do, God does. One of Abraham's relatives. Now, don't get hung up on that Isaac's going to marry one of his cousins. It's totally normal in parts of this country. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. None of you thought that was that funny. Rebecca is one of Abraham's family. And it's not a picture of weirdness. It's a picture that she is a fearer of God. She is one from the line of faith. She is the kind of person, right, that Isaac should marry. She's spoken well of in her appearance. To her character, that she has not been with a man, is spoken well of. And so the servant gives her this test, and she passes with flying colors. She offers to water all 10 of his camels. This would have taken probably hundreds of trips back and forth from the spring to the trough. This would have been this is no small offer of hospitality. This is a hardworking, godly woman. And it says that the servant spent this time watching her. He watched her character. He watched to see, is she really the kind that Isaac should marry? Is she genuine in character? Is she genuine in her faith for God? And he's praying in this moment as he watches her to know, is this the one? God, is this who you've led me to? You've brought me 500 miles. Is this her? And he comes to the end of this, and he finds out that she is from Abraham's family. And that seals it for him. He knows without a shadow of a doubt, this is the one. Now, he doesn't propose right there. She doesn't know what's up yet. She doesn't quite understand what he's there for. Now, he gives her some gold. He gives her some gold as a thank you, I guess. And I guess she took it and she was thankful for it. But she offers to bring him back to the house. And let's see what happens when she shows up with 10 camels. And a random man and back at the house. Look at verse 28. It says, the young woman ran and told her mother's household about these things. Rebekah had a brother whose name was Laban. Laban ran out toward the man to the spring. As soon as he saw the ring and the bracelets on his sister's arms and heard the words of Rebekah, his sister, thus the man spoke to me. He went to the man, and behold, he was standing by the camels at the spring. And he said, come in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? For I have prepared the house and a place for the camels. And so the man came to the house and unharnessed the camels and gave straw and fodder to the camels. And there was water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. And food was set before him to eat. But he said, I will not eat until I have said what I have to say. And he said, speak on. So when the servant, when Rebekah goes and tells her family what has happened, of course they're curious. And so they come out. Now, it's important for us to recognize that Laban has very mixed intentions here. And we're going to see more of that later in the story if you've read ahead, right? See, her older brother Laban, probably her father Bethuel, because he's not really mentioned in the story, probably he's old or incapacitated or something. And this older brother is in charge of making sure that she is taken care of. And so he comes out and he sees the gaudy gold rings and the gaudy bracelets. And his first thought when he sees the camels, he sees the gold, he sees the entourage, he's thinking, what can I get from this? What can I get out of this? He is the opposite of his sister. Rebekah has served before she ever knew there was any reward, before she ever knew there was gold bracelets or anything. Now, Laban is the opposite. He's serving because there is gold bracelets at the end, maybe, because there is some reward at the end. And so he sets the whole thing up, not really out of hospitality, but out of greed. And Rebekah, before she knew there was any of that, she shows her true character. See, Laban is a picture of selfishness, while Rebekah is a picture of hard work and hospitality and faith. And so they bring the servant in, and they put food before him, and he sits down to eat. And the servant says, before we go any further, let me just make it clear while I am here, right? He doesn't want there to be any misunderstanding of what he came for. And so he is straightforward with the family, right? And he retells the story from 34 to 48. We're not going to read the whole thing because we just read it. But the servant relays all that's happened, and he tells it from his perspective. He tells him about how he's been sent on this mission by his master, and how he was seeking God's direction in this, and he was seeking God to be to take care of the details, to provide, to give provision for him on this trip. And he highlights over and over how God took care of things, how God was in it. What is he pointing out to this family? This is God's will. He's highlighting over and over how God is in the details, that this is what God has led me to. And once he relays all the details of the camels and the water and this and that, he lays it out. I want to take her, Rebekah, to be the wife of my master's son, Isaac. I want to take her. He lays it all on the line, and here's what they say. Look at verse 49. Here's his last punchline. He says, now then, if you're going to show steadfast love and faithfulness to my master, tell me. And if not, tell me that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. Then Laban and Bethuel, the father, answered and said, this thing has come from the Lord. We cannot speak to you bad or good, one way or the other. He says, behold, Rebekah is before you. Take her and go, and let her be the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has spoken. When Abraham's servant heard their words, he bowed himself to the earth before the Lord. And the servant brought out jewelry of silver and of gold and garments and gave them to Rebekah. And he also gave to her brother and to her mother costly ornaments. And he and the men who were with him ate and drank, and they spent the night there. And when they arose in the morning, he said, send me away to my master. Her brother and her mother said, let the young woman remain with us a while, at least 10 days, and after that she may go. But he said to them, do not delay me, since the Lord has prospered my way. Send me away that I may go to my master. And they said, let us call the young woman and ask her. And they called Rebekah and said to her, will you go with this man? And she said, I will go. So they sent away Rebekah, their sister, and her nurse, and Abraham's servant and his men, and they blessed Rebekah and said to her, O sister, may you become thousands of 10,000s, and may your offspring possess the gates of those who hate him. And Rebekah and her young women arose and rode on the camels and followed the man, and thus the servant took Rebekah and went his way. You see, there's this moment as the servant proposes a marriage to this family. He lays it all on the line, and it's up to the family to respond. It's their choice. This is just how it worked. This really wasn't Rebekah's choice. They make it her choice, but that's not the way it really worked. Now, the servant has craftily laid it out to show them that God is in this. God has made these circumstances work out. And if you're going to say no, then say no, but just know, God is in this, right? And so Laban really has no choice but to say, hey, the Lord's in this. It seems to be that the Lord is in this, and he agrees to it. The servant gives them a whole bunch of stuff. It's a dowry. It's a payment for this woman. And they spend the night celebrating, giving thanks to God that this is going to work out, right? He's so excited. The only problem is the next morning he gets up, and the servant goes to get his stuff ready, and he's ready to take Rebekah back, but the long journey back. And what happens? Not so fast, my friend. Laban speaks up, and he suggests, well, maybe she should stay for a little while, 10 days or so. The Hebrew really doesn't mean that exactly. It really is like this open-ended well, let's see how this works out. We'll go one day, but not right now, right? He's pulling back from this. He's signed the contract. He's taken the money, but now he is trying to back out of this. He doesn't want to send her. Laban's gotten what he wants out of it, and now he's kind of second-guessing this. And so they turn to Rebekah to ask her what she thought. This is actually illegal in their day, right? They've already agreed to this. It is illegal for them to come to her and ask her what she wants. And I think he did this because I think he assumed that she was like him, that she wasn't a person of faith, that she would say, no way, I'm not going 500 miles to some random stranger. No, I'm not doing that. He turns to her to ask, and he hopes that she will say no. And the story grinds to this halt, this moment of tension, as Laban turns to his sister and says, will you go? And she holds her future in her hands in that moment. She can say, no, I will not, and everything will fall apart. Or she can say, yes, I will go. And what does she do? I think in a surprise to Laban, Rebekah says, I will go. Like so many greats of the faith, so many of those who have lived by faith, they said, I will go. I will do what God has made clear is what I'm supposed to do. I will do what God is in. I'm going to walk in the center of His will. It's scary. Yeah, I've never been there. Yeah, I don't know this man. Yeah, I don't understand all that's happened. I can't see all the details. This is the non-detailed person that's okay with all of this. She's going, I'm going to live by faith. I will go. This is a godly woman, a hardworking woman, who's hospitable, who's beautiful, who's of godly character, and of most importance, she has faith in God. Look at verse 62. It says, now Isaac had returned from Be'er Lahai-Roi and was dwelling in the Negev. And Isaac went out to meditate in the field toward evening. And he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, there were camels coming. And Rebekah lifted up her eyes. And when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from the camel and said to the servant, who is that man walking in the field to meet us? And the servant said, it is my master. And so she took her veil and covered herself. And the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. And Isaac brought her into the tent of Sarah, his mother, and took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. And so Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. This would have taken weeks, if not months, for them to return back to Isaac. But when they return, Isaac is in the south, in the Negev, near this well. This is a common place for a wedding. And when the servant arrives back, it's like a scene out of The Notebook or your favorite movie, right? What happens? It's just this beautiful, I'm not romantic hardly at all, but it's this beautiful romantic scene, right? And Isaac, the servant arrives, and Isaac, it says, he looks up, and behold, he sees. And then it says, and Rebekah, she looks up, and behold, she sees, right? It's this, they make eye contact, and it's never the same after that. Anybody, that's your story today? Right? No. She looks up, she sees Isaac. Isaac sees her, and she dismounts from the camel out of respect, and she veils herself out of respect for this man, and he takes her to be his wife. He takes her in. Now, they're going to have a complicated relationship, and we're going to see that play out, but it begins in love. It begins in joy and gladness at God fulfilling his promise to provide for Abraham and his family, to give them a multitude of children, to give them the land of promise. It's a beautiful story of how God is at work in the detail. Every step of the story shows that God is orchestrating events. From the timing at the well to Rebekah's family agreeing. And even though we don't see it always, we can't always understand why things work out the way they do in our lives or why the details play out the way they do. Many times today, we're just too smart and we play it off as, well, that's just circumstance. That's just the world we live in. I don't know why it happened that way. and we neglect to see that God is the one who is writing the story. Today, we need to acknowledge where God is at work in the details of our lives, where we see God working out circumstance. I went to the hospital on Monday morning, a little after 8 o'clock, and I was going by to see somebody that I didn't know who's in a bad situation. And I'm walking down the hallway, and I get almost to the room, and the nurse comes out of the room, and she says, "Oh, are you here to see so-and-so?" I'm like, "What are you talking about? Yeah, I'm here to see so-and-so. Like, how do you know? Because, I mean, there's people everywhere. Like, what, why is she pointing at me?" I'm here, and I walk in the room, and okay, all right. God had orchestrated this moment for a really specific purpose, right? For me to be there at that time. I tried to go Sunday, didn't work out. I'm showing up Monday morning, and this man's leaving the hospital. I needed a ride. I needed to talk. I needed somebody to pray with him. And I just fail to believe that was a random chance. I reject that God's not in those details of our lives. I think the other thing we need to learn in this story is that faith requires action. Rebecca shows that. She doesn't just say, "I believe in God, yeah, I'm a hard worker, yeah, I'll be hospitable, I'll do all this stuff." But when there's an unknown, when there's a step of faith, she's not willing to take it. No, our faith requires action. Faith isn't just belief in God's plan, it's acting on it. There's so many of you that probably need to take a step of faith that God maybe has been speaking to you about how you need to step out and do this thing, take on this thing, go somewhere, reconcile with somebody, whatever it is, whatever that thing is that God has been speaking to you about. God doesn't put it on your mind as just this fancy idea. No, your faith is meant to lead to action. Take that step of faith. Trust that God will take care of you. I think there's a lot we could say about marriage, maybe how we need to go back to arrange marriage. I'm just kidding. That's not the application point from today at all. But I feel that as a father with little girls. But I think there's a lot we can learn here about who we choose as friends, who we choose as spouses, what we're to look for, what's most important, not beauty, not external success. What's most important is character. It's hard work. It's kindness, it's hospitality, and ultimately it's faith in God, right? That's the kind of person that we're looking for. Let me pray this morning. God, I thank you for this story, and I thank you for just how you are God who is in the details, who you work out every circumstance of our life. And God, forgive us where we give credit to random chance and we neglect to see